This podcast is brought to you by Art Margins, the online journal of East and Central European contemporary art. Download more podcasts and read interviews, articles, and reviews at www.artmargins.com.
Hi, this is Susan Snodgrass. We're at Three Walls Gallery in Chicago on the occasion of the Voices from the Center exhibition. We're here today talking with the curator and the artist of the exhibition, and we'll introduce ourselves and then we'll begin our conversation. So I'm Susan Snodgrass from Art Margins.
I'm Janelle Engelstad, the producer of this exhibition and curator.
I'm Matej Vakulár. I'm a multimedia artist exhibiting in this show from Slovakia.
I am Miklós Surány, photographer. From Hungary.
I'm Otto Hudec. I'm also a multimedia artist from this show.
I am Jan Vorkos. We exhibit with my wife together on this exhibition as a studio graphic spot.
I'm Magda Stanova, more or less from Slovakia.
So why don't we begin with the concept for the exhibition, how it came about, and how these artists became involved with the exhibition.
Okay. I was in Chicago about a year and a half ago and stopped by Three Walls to have a meeting, really. It was more of a social call. And I was invited to exhibit a project I have done called Voices from the Center, which actually many of these artists actually, all these artists worked some way on that web. It's a web-based project where I interviewed people from four Central European countries, Poland, Hungary, Czech Republic, and Slovakia, about how their life has changed since the fall of the Berlin Wall. And the first manifestation of that material was in a website, www.voicesfromthecenter.net. Go there, it's a great website. The material has also been put into exhibitions and presented in public programs throughout Central Europe and the United States. So for this particular incarnation of that material, rather than just show the interviews, I was really interested in engaging all these artists who I'd worked with in one way or another. Some of them are also former students of mine from in Slovakia, and asking them to respond to the theme and open it up to a much broader perspective on the topic.
Mm-hmm. So maybe each artist then can maybe talk a little bit about how you responded to the project and how the work in the exhibition, you could introduce the work that you've done for the exhibition and how it responds to this, the original Voices from the Center project.
So I've been cooperating with Janelle for a longer time, and we was working together in Slovakia. I was helping Janelle with the project. How did I respond to this show? That's a good question, because like I'm focusing with my art, not only, but like in a big part, on researching how building up of the new society right now after the fall of the Berlin Wall in Slovakia, and more or less about how the newborn capitalism, basically, and why there is capitalism right now and not something else, how does it work, or if it works, and how does it influence people, and media and the society. So I decided for this project to create a sound piece, and also partially web-based piece about public space and situation of public space in Slovakia, but also I was interested to compare it with public space in US, because here the capitalism is working for a long time, and how it influences the public space. So I was comparing these two ideas or about public space in both of the countries, and then it was interviews-based piece, and then from these interviews there was one question, what are you missing in public space in your country, on the US side and on the Slovak side, and then based on these answers, I made a workshop in Slovakia with people, just how can they help or solve these problems, just sort of idea workshop, and then these ideas are or manuals basically, which arise from this project, are placed online so people can read it and can maybe use them, you know, as suggestions what to do about these problems.
Question, yeah. So the American contributions, were they all over the United States, or were they just in Chicago, or?
It was all over the U.S.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
It was kind of like West Coast, East Coast, and then Middle.
And another question, did you find that there were any commonalities, or were there really two stark differences between what people's expectations of what public space should do or not do?
Actually, this is a good question, because I was really interested how different it is, you know, also for myself, and actually I was surprised first that there was not that many differences as I expected to be. But on the other hand, I would say, I don't want to generalize it, but like roughly I can say that, for example, Slovaks was more complaining about the new development and the behavior of the developers in public space and privatization of public property. And US, there were more basically complaining about public services in public spaces, or about freedom on private property, of movement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll talk about your project and come back to how these different projects intersect.
Yeah, we met with Janiel in 2009 in Slovakia, and in Žilina. When I were in residency, so I just show my work her and she really likes it. My work is about all about Hungary, and we can have a culture. I'm try to collect the all communist heritage about this kind of architecture.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to focus on every house. It's kind of portrait of it's kind of portrait photography, but it's of course it's landscape, and both inside and outside. So I do still lifes also. You can see in the booklet.
And is this architecture still prevalent today? I mean, it came out of the communist sort of into the countryside, but it's still kind of maintained in the same.
Occasionally, you can find, but it's really disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the last few years, because you know the new weekend house architecture is more modern, more, you know, it's more Western.
And is the work function on a purely documentary level, or are you kind of interested in preserving this?
No, mm-hmm. It's documentary, but not, so I don't want to do typology of mm-hmm. things, so I'm always try to find the best pieces in the different designs, I mean, you know, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so in terms of responding to the original project, you were someone who was interviewed, or does the work from the original voices from the center?
Interview.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
about these fight parks during the communists, because my childhood, every summer we're on weekend house,
mm-hmm.
from family, from friends, family, mm-hmm. friends, weekend house. So
mm-hmm.
I'm, you know, it's a really lively childhood memory for
mm-hmm.
me.
Yeah, we actually, on the website, you can find an interview with him about the weekend houses, which part of that is next to his work in the gallery.
Okay.
We put a little piece of the interview. And then
mm-hmm.
it also links to his website where you can see not only his work on weekend houses, but his other work documenting Hungarian society and culture.
So Otto, your work is kind of connected in this sort of childhood or looking back at your own growing up.
I become very personal theme this time. No, I just wanted to start because I was participating in the first exhibition with Jamil that was like Voices of the Center 1, you can call it. That was in Slovakia. And there I chose to work with objects from the socialism, and I had the life-size paintings in public spaces of those objects. And I chose to, like, it was really my idea, like, to don't comment those objects. So I pick like some things, like for example the police car or Pedro chewing gum that was very popular in that time. And this work now, it's kind of like, it's a little bit of continuing the same kind of subject. I again choose different objects, but I made it more personal and I related it to my family. I interviewed my my family, because also the thing is that I think that the theme of the comparison of the two regimes, for example, it's a very difficult theme, and I don't feel very okay in telling my own opinion because I was really small when it changed. So basically I feel that mostly when I speak with anybody, that each of us is more formed by the opinions of our parents or of our friends or people who experienced more. So I choose to talk about my my family, and I have a family of teachers, so it's all kind of like a middle class family, and I choose to portray this kind of life, and I pick the car that they had in that time, which is a Škoda 100L, which was a very popular car, you know, like in that time there were like maybe 7 models of cars, and most of people got this one because it was a Czechoslovak car. And I reproduce it from wood. So I started from a small photo that they had in their in the room. That's them in Yugoslavia having a lunch in front of this car. And these are like the very popular things, you know, like people used to go to camp. Yugoslavia was very popular. It was not so easy to get there because you needed to get a permit first. And it was like the first time that they went to the sea and they saw a sea, so it was a special thing.
And probably should mention that the work takes the form of these objects of watercolors. I mean, you have some family photographs.
Yeah, I interviewed my family, and then I chose some objects that kind of relate to each of the member, because, for example, my father, he lived this era of 70s. He was crazy about hippie music and Led Zeppelin and whatever. So I all the time remembered that it was a very important moment for him to search for the vinyls in that time and so on. So then I picked, like, for example, a vinyl player and made an aquarelle of that. And then I chose different objects or different things. And
maybe. So maybe we'll go
around here. Yes, actually, I think we are, as a graphic expo, we are exception in this exhibition, because we are not an artist in our daily life. We are designers. Our adventure with Voices from the Center started in 2009. It is very, very important thing for us, because it was the first commission that we have done together with my wife as graphic expo. And we made Voices from the Center's website. We designed it with Janelle as our client. After these 3 years, Dana invite us to do something for this exhibition, and we decided to, as a point of, as a starting point of our work, we we just tried to find the differences between seeing a world by Polish people before falling of the Berlin Wall and after that, and try to put it in one piece, one poster. This poster is about it's untitled Kaleidoscope. It's titled Kaleidoscope. It's about the way how Polish people used to see the Western world when we are isolated, and mainly they talk that it's very colorful composition, very colorful life outside. But I think after the wall was fallen, they realized that not everything is so so nice, so colorful, and the free market has also some complicated things to live with. And they, we as a Polish society, we are trying to assimilate with this Western world, I think, still. So this work is about it.
You should mention what you've contributed here is, in addition to the website design, is a poster that incorporates
Yes, we asked Janae to choose some exceptions from her interviews, which are fitting this idea, and we put them on this poster.
So, I was doing for Janelle translations when she did the webpage Voices from the Center, and by doing this I noticed that there are many words that are difficult to translate in other language, and it's so either because the culture was different, so these concepts didn't exist in the other culture, or also because there are nuances between different languages and grammar structure, and so like you cannot translate things from one language to another language one-to-one. So for this show I did a piece called Life and Culture of a Foreign Speaking Region, where I took some documents and some jokes from the time of communism, and I translated the like some part of it, which I found interesting, and when the context is necessary to understand the thing or understand the joke or the text, then this context is also provided. So in case of jokes, if maybe you won't laugh at the end of reading it, but you can understand what was funny in that culture, or like through these excerpts you can like learn something about the culture, mm-hmm. like through understanding the language.
Mm-hmm. And you've also have a table that has a question for audiences who come in here, asking them to recall sort of Cold War era jokes or so something about the time period that.
Yeah. So there were like during communism there were really a lot of jokes, and it was very common that people were telling jokes to each other, and which kind of fade out now. So you would have like jokes in cartoons, in magazines and so on, but it's more like, okay, it's somebody's job to do it. But I feel that kind of there are like less jokes that people would tell to each other, and I was wondering if like on the other side of this Iron Curtain, there were also some jokes from the other side. And there is like in US I see also a lot of like cartoons and comics and like comedies, but it's also kind of somebody's job. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if there is like popular culture of like just jokes that doesn't have an author and just read like in oral way.
Actually, it really made me think. I actually couldn't think of, you know, what kind of one or two very specific sort of jokes, but I think there was a lot of growing up in the 60s and 70s in popular culture, there was a lot of sort of metaphoric ways, like science fiction would use this kind of outside enemy, which would be, you know, a metaphor for communism, or before that it would be the metaphor of fascism or something like that. So, but probably more so beforehand, or maybe even with Jewish populations who came to the United States. I mean, there's a whole culture in the 50s and 60s, sort of the post-war era, of kind of Jewish humor, which is a kind of
Borscht Belt.
Yeah, kind of reaction to this situation.
Yeah, and another motivation for this work was like, so there are like exhibitions about like history of something, or like histories written by either historians or politicians or who present their own way. And then there is this oral history, which is dealing more with memory, and but also memory changes over time. So what somebody would tell like 20 years ago isn't the same thing that somebody would say now. So that's also changed in the time. And so I wanted to go some kind of a like other way, which doesn't which is like taking of documents and do translation. So without there are some comments about it, but it's more like explaining the language and context, but so that you can make your story out of it. And then so
well, it's interesting. So really at the heart of all of this is the kind of importance of the oral history that emanates from the original project. So whether or not you're, in your case, you are asking people the same thing, directly questions, or you're incorporating quotes, or it seems like the two of you are looking sort of generationally, you're looking at your own, either own country history or your own personal history and sort of talking to people. And I think I'm struck in part because you're all fairly young in terms of looking at the age versus, so I'm thinking you came of age as artists sort of after 1989, rather working as artists, you know, sort of pre-communism and after communism. So I'm just kind of curious of, you know, that history, the importance of that history. Is it trying to find something or make connections to something that is maybe being lost in the culture, or is it that the dialogue still needs to happen, but happen in different ways?
I would say that the connection is not lost, because all what we have actually right now in this former post-communist countries, so it's just you cannot put away the communist era, you know. So everything what is there, even after the change of the system, it's still built on this kind of experience. Whether it was good or bad, you know. And I mean, it's, for me, it's more interesting, for example, where does that go right now and how we deal with that. Somebody can call it trauma, mostly old people, for example, said that it went away. it's really mixed, so those feelings. We definitely built on this, but maybe we are not talking about it that much. It's more like subconscious, or, you know, like it underlies the society, but it's not like everybody's talking about communism all the time there, you know.
So I think we are like all of us are more or less the generation that we were too young when the revolution happened, but still it's not we don't have like a kind of enough distance that could say something in like what could be like objective way, because we are like we are kind of trapped in this secondhand memories that we have from somebody else. So it's kind of a weird situation, like.
Yes, I think we are still in that somehow, as Matej said, subconscious. our families, for example, my parents, my grandparents, very, very often talk about it, especially my grandfather, who is a high officer in the Polish army in 1970s, 1960s. And he has many problems in family life because of that, because of quitting army. And I think it is still topic for us to deal with.
Either one of you want to respond?
Well, I think that for sure we deal with the problem, but I think if we will compare our generation with the generations before, it's already much, much less. And we entered the global world a lot. We entered the capitalism, and I think that's affecting our present more strongly. But of course, it stays with us, and maybe that history of us and our parents and so on affects also how we look at the present situation. And of course, I think that it's like, I think that the families were badly affected by the previous regime, there it stays as much stronger, as something heavy to deal with.
So, Janelle, when you first began the project, it was in 2006.
But it didn't begin as a project. It really was, I was in Bratislava, Slovakia. I was on a Fulbright teaching at the Academy of Fine Arts and Design. And I, that was my purpose really for being there, was to teach arts administration really, but I was more interested in teaching those skills in a practical way, so really teaching students how to do what I do, which is produce these public and community art projects. And so that was really my purpose for being there, and we produced two practical projects, which three of these artists were in the class and they participated in. And on the side, I started to have conversations with my neighbors and my colleagues and about their experiences, because I was really interested in getting beyond the Cold War rhetoric. Everything's gray, everyone stood in line, everything. So, you know, there is these alternative histories, and we each have these visions of each other on the other side of the wall with Hyon's piece references from the east looking west, but there's a west looking east. And growing up during the Cold War, growing up in the 60s and 70s, you know, we had this propaganda that we grew up with, that everything was bad, and also that the Russians were coming to get us. So I wanted, and I was really interested, did you think the Americans were coming to get you? And absolutely, people who of my generation did, were taught that they had to do the same drills that we did. We had some drills, or we had these shelters to go to in case of nuclear attack, and it was the same thing over there. So there's these competing propagandas creating these histories, and I was really interested to get beyond that, just in daily life. And then I started hearing stories that were so compelling, I started to write them down, and then realized that this was material that would really be a wonderful project. And I did not consider doing it as a website. I really considered it as a public art piece, that I was going to take pieces of these interviews and match them to place and somehow do a public work in the cities that connected to the place that people were talking about. And then I realized that that really wouldn't honor the stories, that the stories needed to be really honored, and that it was a real gift that these stories were coming out, especially because I was talking to people, some people. Once I realized I had a project and was then talking specifically to people to record their stories, who had never had the opportunity to share these stories. And for them, there was a release, or there was an acknowledgement like, wow, no one's done this. No one's, I remember at the first exhibition that I had at Stanitsa and Zhilina, so many people came and thanked me and said, no one has done this for us. So for me, it was crucial to find a format that honored that.
And should make, mention that the exhibition has text,
that are from excerpts from the interviews, some photographs, as well as a timeline that sort of contextualizes. And reading through, I'm just really struck how diverse they are, because they go from topics about religion and sexuality and
arts and culture, and
there's such a diversity that there really isn't a kind of one thread or one theme that can define that.
Right.
And I think that is the success of it, you said, what going beyond kind of a rhetoric that we all feel familiar with or that we got trapped in terms of a initial kind of dialogue about.
And the thing that's nice about these exhibitions, I'm actually able to use parts of the interviews that didn't make it onto the website. It was a large job to do this. Both Mate and Magda helped me with translations, but Magda did an incredible amount of translating. And the process to really honor the work was, I would transcribe it. Because I would either speak English with the person I was working with, or if a foreign language, I'd always have a translator. I'd transcribe that, and then I'd send it to one of the people I was working with to do written translation, so that they could compare everything and make sure that it was as good as it could be. And I also was working with an editor in London. So she was editing all my English to just make sure, and that's what she does for a living. She's a really good editor. So she would then get it and correct all the English, and then I'd send it back to the translator to see, okay, did that really mess things up as far as the translator? And then it went to the person I interviewed. Invariably, they made changes. So then we'd start that process all over again. And so it really did, as much as I could, honor this as an oral history. And I wasn't interested in capturing such a pure experience. I would allow the person I interviewed to then make changes. If they thought of something they forgot, or if they wanted to re-say something in a way that was a different way or use different language, because I felt it was really important to give them that opportunity to put this out there as they saw it and experienced it.
So I like the idea of sort of honoring the person who speaks, and you say that it was shown in Slovakia. Is this the first iteration of this project in the States?
Yeah, as far as an exhibition, it's been presented in lectures and in public programs.
So I'm just curious in regards, both you and the artist participating, a sort of maybe expectation, or is there a kind of difference in what these dialogues, goals these dialogues may have that may be different than, let's say, when it was shown in Slovakia, in terms of being in Chicago and talking to American audiences? I mean, your project is very directly involved with talking to Americans about public spaces. So does this project take a kind of educative function, or does it go beyond? I would think it goes beyond that. But
I think it goes beyond that. I'm not sure right now about the general project. Definitely, it's very important part of it is the also to give the message, like, what is it about, but also it goes beyond that. About this project, what I did, I think it also definitely goes beyond that, because I mean, even the name of the piece is Manuals for Public Space, so it's based on this sharing, like kind of grassroots sharing of knowledge, how to solve some problems on your own in public space, how without any government help, for example, just pure based on citizens, because, like, for example, in Slovakia, the public space, the government or the city governments are not really responding to citizen needs, because it's very corrupted, and anybody who has money or more like mafia-driven interests are influencing the public space, and the new developers, which are not tearing down like historical buildings, and nobody really cares about that, And it's very hard to fight this in a legal ways, I would say, right now, because there are not really good laws against that. So I had this idea to create a manuals, just the people to people sharing, and it can grow because the webpage, people can share these manuals and approaches how to solve some problems online or in the wall here in the gallery, which I will then retype also online. So that's really important. And these first starting issues that I have arise from those interviews. And it's all, again, it's 50-50 Slovakia and the US, so yeah.
Can I say something really quick too? Because I don't think this would come up in answer to your question. So I was invited to do this show at Three Walls a year and a half ago, and then last year at this time I came to Chicago and started to think more seriously about the exhibition, and Otto was with me because we were both working in San Francisco on another project, and he was here doing something. So he came, and I invited Otto he was the first artist I invited in this group to participate, to actually come in and replicate what he did he was part of Stanitsa. Otto also did help me with some translations and even interviewed someone for the project, of the original website. But Otto came in to Stanitsa in Žilina in Slovakia, and he recreated one of these objects on one of the walls. He actually painted a famous ship that's part of Soviet.
Aurora.
Yeah, Aurora, which was something of his childhood. And so I invited him to come in and do something like that here. And he started to think about it, and he said, no, I want to do something different. So he really was responding differently to this situation than he had to the other one, which, you know, he can maybe talk about a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I was kind of going to talk in the same way. You know, like, it really affects my choice, the fact that it's going to be shown in the U.S. Of course, in some educative way also, you know, that we all the time think that the view of Americans over the regime that was in Czechoslovakia, it might be different or might be also limited. You know, there is not a life experience and so on. In fact, I chose the car also especially because of U.S. because it's such a symbol for United States, and I wanted to bring the car that was like done in the same era in our country to compare, you know, like I believe that the cars in that period were huge here, you know. Also there is an interesting part that is part of the interviews that my grandparents were waiting for 3 years to get that car, you know. You needed to sign for a lease, and then you were waiting. That it was even kind of romantic because they had the train with the cars was passing through their village, so they were counting how many cars already passed and when the car will arrive. So it's you can see really that how there was some kind of consumerism culture still in the socialist regime, and I think that's also important to say, you know, like that there is the idea of socialism, which is very like idealistic, but that what people lived in the regime is kind of different, and it was pretty much deformed, the idea. And at the same time, you know, like there was the system worked also on a money basis, on a certain kind of consumption, although that consumption was very limited.
And in terms of some of the responses to the drawings and graphic work that you have, are you, in terms of collating the responses, are you going to do something with those?
I will see what the responses will be, so what's going to be the material, and it will depend on that strongly, like if there something like really interesting comes up, and then I can use it, yeah.
I would think, too, working with graphics, I mean, there's a lot that you're also doing with a kind of visual symbolism, you know, that moves beyond the textual, so.
Yeah, that's how it works. Actually, I don't know if this work will have some continuation, because we did not think about it. For sure, it was something totally different from our daily work, because we should think about whole concept. So we didn't have a content. We didn't have some function in it. So we have to invite everything by ourselves, and it is not usually our work, because usually we very like restrictions. And we are running in some way. We are designing together with a client who is responding to our ideas, and this work is very unusual for us. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is more like the old Polish school of poster, which was using metaphor and some kind of philosophy in it. I hope I will have I will tell about it a little bit tomorrow during panel discussion, because I think that graphic design in Poland after falling of the Berlin Wall and after when free market came, it changed a lot. So it is not so free like it was during the communism, when graphics was kind of artists, and in Poland they also very often are anti-Tilton artists, but actually they not.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, and we've talked about it before. It's just the context of currently in Chicago, there's all these graphic exhibitions going
yes,
on with
yes.
Soviet culture. So it's very interesting to hear you say that.
Yes, I think a graphic
design.
Freedom
before versus
yes,
freedom
graphic,
now.
Graphic design in communism in the Eastern countries was something totally different than graphic design of the Western world, which was very functional and which was response to sell something or should sell something or talk about something in the context of a market. And in Poland there was no free market during communism, so graphic designers was very free to use some kind of metaphors, and the graphic design was almost an art. The Polish School of Poster is very good good thing to illustrate it.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of your work, I mean, yours is very specific to locale and place and to a very particular kind of history. So maybe you could talk about your kind of intention behind the work and in terms of its connection to an American or an audience that would be unfamiliar with that.
The idea behind my work is to find the photographic way to try to find photographic way to catch this sad poetry behind the facade, behind the picture. So these picture are sad and funny in the same time. So when I think there are some similarities in the American 60s photography. Not in a way in just the color, but in a way of perspective, like it's Christian Berg came in my mind. He used this kind of point of view to recollect this farm culture all around in the States. So there is similarities, but in my work, because the vacant houses, you know, it's tools and are symbols in the same time. So because they offer a shelter in the nature, and then employ itself mobility. You know, you can go there during the weekend. But in my work, this kind of weekend coziness turns to sometimes nightmare. So
nightmare and
I mean you know, turns, you know, yeah.
Well, I also think it connects a little bit too.
Just think of the buses, you know, people live there mm-hmm. during the weekend, so the, mm-hmm. this is painful, it's kind of a struggle.
And also a kind of, it's an escapism, you know,
yeah.
And, you know, in some regards you might think of that in terms of maybe later periods here, like
yeah.
60s and 70s, where people were just sort of creating their own.
Yeah.
Own habitats, own places to live as a kind of also escaping that kind of 50s and middle America consumerism and things like that. So I'm actually going to maybe end and turn a question to you asked me is why I thought that there was a moment where all of these exhibitions happened to be in Chicago or maybe even more collectively elsewhere. We've had a lot of shows about Soviet posters and graphic art and book art. I mentioned also the Nostalgia exhibition that was currently at the New Museum in New York that came down earlier this month, which was all about a kind of nostalgia for the past. So any thoughts about why this material might be, you know, why this moment we're looking back at? Is it a kind of marker of 20 years after, which is different than maybe the initial 10-year after exhibitions? It seems that 10 years after the fall of the Berlin Wall, there was a lot of shows in Europe that were big surveys that, in a way, was really just collecting as many artists and many contemporary artists who were responding to more to the new political moment and to the new consumerism more so than the past. And so now these exhibitions, some 20 years after, seem to be going further back into a different history. Any thoughts about that?
I think that it could be tied to the 20-year marker, but I also think we're at a really important time of people not wanting to lose that history. And so one way to remember is to present it while we're still only a generation or two away from that. And I think that people in people who are acting as curators and producers of culture are really conscious of bringing this out now. We're 22 years since the mm-hmm. fall of the Berlin Wall. So I don't believe that these shows are traveling. The smart one, I think it was. I don't think this is.
No, yeah, many are not. But
yeah,
And I don't think the Nostalgia exhibition traveled either.
Yeah, so it's mm-hmm. it's not like we're at the end of a long tour that started. But, mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, the first kind of wave of that was in 99. It seemed like a lot of those were traveling.
Touring.
Yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. And in 99, it was really looking at artists at that time who had been producing work for a long time. And if those, it was like, oh, here's the new year, you know, new work from Eastern and Central Europe. And I remember some of those shows, and it was, the thing about those shows that was really interesting to me is they were reviewed and critiqued and looked at and interacted with as if it was a Western show. And that was really striking because you wouldn't expect. It's the same thing that happened when China opened up, you know. So everyone's coming in with Western eyes and looking at this work and expecting, you know, I'm thinking especially with video and things, that these artists would be working in the same way as an American audience who really, or even a Western audience who is working in a completely different way with complete different kind of history and had these materials readily available to them, where during the socialist and communist countries didn't have as much access as we did to these materials. I mean, even in these interviews, there's artists talking about how they had to make their instruments or smuggle tapes around or do things to make video. I think photography was more common and easily accessible, but some of these other things weren't as accessible. So while I'm not so sure on exactly why this time is, why right now we see this abundance of exhibitions, I do think that it's a time of visiting something that hasn't really been looked at, and to do it now while it's still, there's still some freshness to it. We're still very close to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that there are maybe like two possible reasons for it. One is that I think that it becomes to be enough time for reflection, that we are starting to have enough time to be able to look at it more objectively. And I think, maybe I'm wrong, but I think that with the current crisis that it's around the world, I think that kind of reflects, you know, people are looking around and trying to look for another model. So I think that a lot, it brings this kind of nostalgia that is mentioned, you know, that people are, because there are really few other ideas or other solutions. So people used to look back and that what was, which I hope that will not happen, you know, which I hope that that we, and I think that's maybe the good that these exhibitions are happening, that people can learn from the mistakes that happened in the past and think about new ways of doing things.
Yes, I think that Otto most very interesting topic. I also think that this crisis is the first problem for both of us, for both of sides. The first problem which touch one side and the other side. And it result in openness to each other, to share our experiences and try to find a way how to manage with it.
And because, anyways, we are living in global culture. Before, yeah, it was like too connected. Those is not something. I'm not sure if this is the correct word. Now it's like one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so mm-hmm. It's either it's good or bad. Who knows? We will see. Mm-hmm.
Well, that may be a good place to end, I think. Did you have a... I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think like 10 years ago, or maybe like after the revolution, the two systems that communism or socialism and capitalism were seen as like two only options. And the one that we had was bad, so the other one should have to be good one. Mm-hmm. And now when it turns out that the other option is also not a very good one, there is like a necessity of like reflecting the different systems and learn like what was bad in one system, but what was also good at the system. Mm-hmm. And maybe try to come up with a solution, like what could be a system that would connect good parts of both, or like to invent something else.
In my work also, that it's I really like to look at that point, like right after the 1989 revolution, where there was like a big freedom everywhere, you know, and there was a lot of these small companies starting, and even your graphics all sounds a little bit like from that era, yeah, that type of name. That environment started to a little bit fade out. Not, I don't say totally it faded out, it's still, but it started to fade out, and all these little companies crashed. Yeah. And now we have just this.
It ended up with monopolies again.
I think,
which is not that different from the situation before.
Mm-hmm. And I think that we have to look at this at this time in order to see like because I kind of feel that people wanted to go a little bit somewhere else than it is right now, and in this direction, but a little bit kind of like more Scandinavian style, you know. But now we have more something like Bangkok. Or so.
And I think that's the importance of exhibitions like this, is that it just continues the dialogue, because I think there were many dialogues, you know, like you said, right at 89, kind of 10 years after became this big marker, and I think that actually the dialogues are more difficult now. It's like, you know, where do you begin? You know, there was that kind of episodic, you know, kind of unifying moment that you could start from, but after that 20 years, and I think all the points that you bring up are probably, you know, are valid, and I think, anyway, exhibitions like this really continue that. So, and I know there is one other exhibition that's related, also at Columbia College, where it's more of a focus on graphic work.
Yeah, it's book art and paper art before and after the fall of the Berlin Wall. We're looking at what dissident artists were producing in these four countries, and then some young artists in book and paper arts, and how they're responding to a global world. What they're making is young people and young artists. Young meaning, you know, 20s and 30s. Yeah. That's young for some of us here. So they're certainly mature artists with mature ideas. Okay. Very gifted group here we have, and I want to say that and honor the talent that's around this table, because it's the really smart, young, thinking people who have challenged me and taught me as much as I hope I've challenged and taught them over the 5 years. And they're really out there doing really important things, and I honor that. So
that's a great place to end. So. All right. Thank you, everyone.
This podcast is brought to you by Art Margins, the online journal of East and Central European contemporary art. Download more podcasts and read interviews, articles, and reviews at www.artmargins.com.